Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Well, welcome to the podcast, everybody. It's been a crazy week in politics. Of course, that wouldn't tell you what week this was, because it seems every week is a crazy week in politics. But let's dissect a little bit of all that is going on as the tension seems to build in Washington. Joining me, one of my favorite guests, attorney and Democratic strategist and consultant, political consultant, Richard Gordon, returns to the show. And Richard, good to talk to you again.
Pleasure to be on. Thank you.
All right. So much going on. But the double-edged sword in these days of this week seem to be both the search and seizure of President Trump's lawyer's office, Michael Cohen, and then, of course, this Syria rebuke that will be happening. And juggling both those things together, let's first talk about, since you are a lawyer, let's talk about the search and seizure issue. You know, the president said, "They broke into my lawyer's office." Non-lawyers probably need some explanation. Did anybody break into anything?
No, there was no breaking in. And it was interesting that after the president said that his own attorney, the man whose office was allegedly broken into, commented how nice and polite and generous the FBI was in how they conducted themselves, how professional they were. It is an extraordinarily complicated system. There are so many checks on the system to allow the FBI to have gone to a lawyer's office and take the information that they took, where you need the U.S. attorney's involvement, where you need a judge's involvement. There are two separate levels of people who go in. There are people who go in and get the information and screen it and then decide who gets to see it or not. So it's not even the people doing the investigation who get to see it. They have to go in first and make a determination and an analysis on whether this is attorney-client privilege or privilege in some other way. They only turn over information to the investigators that they have determined is not privileged. So to say that they barged down the door, they broke in, I mean, it's dramatic. And it sounds great, but the truth of the matter is they had a court order from a judge allowing them to do it. It had been approved. I'm sure they knocked politely and were let in. And obviously, Mr. Cohen has said as much.
Well, I was going to say that we do know they were polite and respectful, because that is what Michael Cohen said. Now, I think part of the reason, and I think even Professor Alan Dershowitz has been yapping about this, and he's really had a kind of a change of views, it seems, though he says he hasn't, says he's a libertarian. But that being said, he sort of really went after this, you know, going after. But my take on this is, look, this wasn't an entry into Michael Cohen's office because they were trying to find stuff on President Trump, which, hence the president's tweet, attorney-client privilege is dead. It wasn't about that. This was about crimes potentially committed by Michael Cohen, right? That's a huge difference. It would be terrible if they went into Cohen's office to say, "We want stuff on your client." That's not what happened here. This is about Cohen himself. He needs to be pretty nervous.
Oh, he needs to be very nervous. I mean, there's a number of things here. One, he should be very nervous because no matter how you dice and cut his comments, no matter what you say about what he did, it's very hard to come up with a rationale that it's okay. So was it an illegal campaign contribution that he made to Stormy Davis, or was it done on behalf of his client, or was it done without his client's knowledge and he just went ahead and did it? He is going to be in a world of hurt, both legally, with the Bar Association, et cetera, because he has done a lot of things that, allegedly has done a lot of things that, no matter how you look at it, is going to put him into trouble. But they went in because, you know, there are two women who have, well, they're more than two women, but recently there are two women,
right?
The playmate.
The over $100,000 category of woman.
Yes, the Stormy Davis and the playmate
Stormy Daniels,
were both alleged. Well, there's another one actually,
right,
besides her. They're both alleging that they had relationships with Donald Trump before he became president, and it appears that Mr. Cohen may have made different payments to both of them and has done other things. That's what they were looking for, and that's what they were trying to obtain. It does seem that Cohen was a target of this as opposed to President Trump. However, if they do find things that are material, then they can turn that over. Now, it's important to note that the way this thing happened, it appears, is that the Mueller investigation found information that had nothing to do with them, and they turned it over to the U.S. Attorney's Office because it was not in the mandate of the special counsel to go investigate it. So it doesn't appear it has anything to do with Russia, anything to do with Donald Trump. It appears it has to do with crimes that may have been committed by Mr. Cohen.
And listeners who are Trump supporters would hear what you just said and said, but that's why this is so wrong. There's Mueller is charged with the Russia investigation and how did Russia hack our system? And yes, whether or not the Trump campaign was involved at all. When you're doing Stormy Daniels stuff and other, you know, women relationships and whatever they may be, or apparently with Cohen, there has something to do with the taxicab medallions. It may be other things. But what do you say to people that go, that's not what this is supposed to be about? Do you just respond by going, right, and Bill Clinton wasn't supposed to be about Monica Lewinsky either?
Well, look, let's take politics out of this for a moment, and let's just look at this from a legal perspective. So if the police break into your house because they think you are dealing drugs, and they come into your house and they find other wrongdoing and other crimes...
A dead body in the corner of the room.
There you go. I think we would all agree that it's completely appropriate for the police to enforce the law. So in this particular case, Mr. Mueller or his team seems to have found something that Mr. Cohen has done. They did not believe a criminal offense. They did not believe it's within their purview, and so they turned it over to the people who have the responsibility to make an independent decision on whether it is or not. Now, as far as Mr. Dershowitz goes, you know, it's funny you say this because I was thinking about this just this morning. I've known Alan for a long time, and I have great respect for Professor Dershowitz. I don't know what is going on lately. I know he had dinner with the president last night, and it appears he's advising him politically.
Well, actually, it was funny. I have to say, CNN reported that on his way into the dinner, he said, I'm here to give advice on the Middle East. And then he was asked, well, were you also talking about all this Russia stuff? I can't talk about what I'm going to discuss with the president.
Attorney-client.
Attorney-client privilege. Well, how come you could do the first part but not the second part? But anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, I'm sure they talked about a lot of things, but it seems that Mr. Dershowitz has changed his point of view on a number of things, but it's hard to understand how one can argue that the FBI does not have, and the Second Circuit here and the U.S. Attorney here in New York does not have the right, when they see wrongdoing, to investigate it. And that's what they're doing. I mean, they haven't charged him with anything.
Yeah.
They're gathering information. And they also had reason to believe that Mr. Cohen was going to destroy documents. They were concerned about that, and they wanted to get to him before that was done.
So now the president is, I'm sorry, but he's just absolutely out of his mind with this stuff. And I mean, I think anybody watching television can see that and seeing the tweets. So my question is, now you've got to be ready. Are we about to hit with pardoning everybody, or more likely what he is tweeting about is everybody's crossing the line? So you get the sense he wants Rosenstein out. The White House, through Sarah Sanders, seems to be saying, and the president can fire Mueller. That just isn't true. But that's what the White House is now saying. So what you see is the president getting ready to do some of those things. And let me add one last point, and I'll turn it over to you, which is the president was supposed to go to, I think, South Africa, right? South America?
He was supposed to go to Peru for
Peru,
the
Peru, yes,
Latin
I'm sorry,
American
right.
conference.
Yes, and which they report he didn't want to go anyway. So what he said, no, I can't go because I have to deal with Syria. Now, the last time he was bombing Syria, he did it from Mar-a-Lago, so I'm not quite sure why he can't do that from Peru. When I heard that news, I thought to myself, no, this is because he is over the moon crazy over this investigation. And he can't even function or concentrate.
Well, the people I feel badly for are the University of Alabama football team, who were at the White House yesterday,
yeah.
You know, for their big moment after winning the national championship, and supposedly he was distracted. Look, if we could forget the particular incumbent for a moment, the President of the United States, when faced with an international crisis and a potential military intervention, I have no problem with him canceling anything to be in the White House, to be with his advisors and whatnot. The fact that he did it from Mar-a-Lago last time is not a good thing, and maybe he learned a little something from this. So I have no problem with him staying home and dealing with it. As far as his anger goes, look, throughout the 2016 election, people said the man did not have the temperament to be president of the United States. I think he has proven that time and time and time again. My big worry, the thing that I'm concerned about, is, you know, this is not a time to be macho. This is not a time to be, the strong guy who acts quickly. There are Russian civilians in harm's way, and if we're not really careful, we are going to engage Russia in a way that we do not want to do, and that is a problem. And I think the president's hands in many, many, many ways are tied here. And just one caveat on all of this. You know, Congress needs to really re-engage on the War Powers Act, and I understand that Senator Kaine has a bill in now that would do that and would regain a significant amount of power back to Congress where it belongs. The President of the United States does not have the power to just go ahead and institute these military activities around the world without congressional approval, unless it's an emergency situation. It's hard to argue that, as despicable and disgusting as what Assad did a week or so ago, is an emergency situation today. He can go to Congress. He has the time to go to Congress to ask them to authorize him to go do this. He is not doing that. Now, let's be clear, President Obama didn't either, and that's because Congress, in a lot of ways, did not authorize the bill again. They need to do that. Congress needs to take that power back. My concern here is you have a president who is out of control, angry over something going on domestically that connects with him personally. He's got to be able to leave that at the door and work on this international situation, which, as I said, we're going head-to-head against the Russians, threats back and forth. You know, they're saying, if you shoot missiles into Syria, we're going to attack not just where it is, but we're going to attack where the missiles came from, meaning our ships and whatnot. This is a potentially horrific situation. Clear heads need to prevail. I'm glad the president's going to be in the White House to deal with it. I hope he could deal with his own out-of-control emotions as well.
Well, and speaking of Syria, which you talk about, once again, the president tweeting this week, you know, get ready, Russia, we're sending missiles and they're nice and new and smart. Obviously, I comment that these are smart missiles, official term. But wasn't this the same guy who, before he was president and after he was president, said, we don't forecast the military steps we're going to take? Obama did that. And once you do that, you lose all power. You've got to keep the element of surprise. You have to be unpredictable. We're not going to talk about that. And he's tweeting, get ready, the bombs are on their way.
Yeah, it's hard to understand. I mean, obviously, this is someone who, throughout his career, has always said one thing and done something else. And this is not... it's inconsistent for the rest of us, but it's not inconsistent for him. And on that level, it's a little bit stunning. You know, Paul, maybe I overthink these things, but I look at this and I say to myself, oh, maybe he's saying this because this will give he and the Russians time to work something out or have some type of solution or have a discussion or a dialogue. That maybe he is not actually tipping his hand, but saying he's tipping his hand. But I have a feeling that's giving these guys way too much credit. I have no idea why the president would even say such a thing, as opposed to just doing it. I think it's a mistake. As I said, I'm deathly afraid of what this means for our relationship with Russia and what it could mean to American, servicemen and servicewomen who are serving over there.
Switching gears for a moment, Paul Ryan announces he's not going to run for office again. So he not only won't be Speaker, if indeed Republicans can control the House, but he also will not be running. He's giving up Congress. Question to you, as he said, it's all about family. I actually tend to believe him because he has said this kind of thing before. But that being said, what do you think? Do you think there's some handwriting on the wall that he realizes he might not be Speaker anyway if the Democrats take over Congress? Though a new poll came out this week, which indicates that Democrats actually only have a 3-point margin over Republicans for who folks want to control Congress, and that's within the margin of error. So Democrats have really lost that momentum they had a few weeks ago when it was 16, or that's a month ago, when they were 16% ahead of the poll.
Right. Well, first of all, I have to be honest with you, Paul, and tell you that as opposed to many of my friends and colleagues, I am really not sanguine about the Democratic chances in the fall. I mean, you know, everyone I speak to is euphoric about how many Senate and House and governor's races. And when you go through them one at a time, it doesn't seem to be the case. I actually believe Paul Ryan on this issue. He hesitated for few days, as you may recall, and even taking the speakership because of his children. You know, I think he understands that his oldest is going to go to college soon and is going to leave home, and he hasn't been home in a long time. So I understand that. I respect that. I think he may be a little tired of Congress and what it makes you do and how difficult it is and how hard these jobs are. So I take him at his word. But I will tell you this, because this is interesting. I did get a phone call this morning from a person who will be a Democratic nominee for governor, who said to me that...
A nominee or a candidate, by the way?
Is a candidate. Will be the nominee.
Okay.
They haven't chosen their candidate yet.
Oh, okay. All right.
And just said to me straight out, I think he's running in 2020 for president.
That Paul Ryan is?
No. Yeah. And I said, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
The comment was, don't be shocked. So I don't know. This is a member of Congress, someone who knows him well. So I was a little bit surprised, but we'll see how that plays out. I think I'm going to take him at his word. I think he wants to be home. He has three children who are, you know, in their teens. One will go to college soon. I think he wants to be home for that. And I think he's exhausted. I think these jobs are extremely hard. Don't forget, this is a person who actually, as opposed to most people in his party, called Donald Trump out repeatedly during the nominating process, said a number of things during the nominating process that were very negative about Donald Trump. Now, he has fallen into line since the inauguration of the president last year, but on some level, this might be just extraordinarily difficult for him. Now, he completely rejected that notion today when someone asked him, does this have anything to do with the president? He said, oh, not at all. We have a great relationship. But you got to wonder. You really have to wonder.
Oh, totally. So if that now highlights for people, okay, this, you know, if Democrats take over the House, you do get Nancy Pelosi as Speaker, which would happen even if Paul Ryan was running or won. But the question is, you know, Nancy Pelosi herself, I mean, they're, you know, just as they here in Illinois, the way they make Mike Madigan the enemy of the people,
sure.
You know, they're doing that with Nancy Pelosi. What's the Democrat, the fact that they're losing momentum, that the country doesn't seem to feel as though they really want Democrats in charge? Yeah, and we got to look at the midterms. That's just really scary with all that's going on, isn't it? That Democrats can't even get up behind their candidates and see them as being back in charge.
Well, it does, and I think it's really an interesting comment. I mean, Trump's poll numbers have gone up lately. They're not as horrific as they have been. I mean, they're bouncing more into the middle 40s than in the low 40s, high 30s that they have been. But the Democratic Party seems to be failing to deliver a message that the American people want to hear. So you can't just be opposed. You can't just be against Donald Trump. You have to offer a vision and a message and how you're going to run the country. And clearly, there are many people in this country who are not in favor of Leader Pelosi, see her as, you know, way too liberal, way out of step with the country. I don't think people are going to vote for or against Nancy Pelosi. I think in individual districts, they will turn her into the boogie person or whatever to run against her. But Congress is really a district-by-district type of thing, even though we've moved dramatically towards a parliamentary type of system, a party type of system. We still get decided in 435 different elections. And I think the truth of the matter is that what's going to end up happening is how America sees the leadership of this country in the fall. And if they see the economy doing well, if they see continued job growth, even though it was kind of weak, the one that was reported last week, but if they see an America that is on the move and progressing, then it's not going to be a great day for Democrats, even though a lot of Democrats think it will. Ultimately, it could be much closer to a push. I mean, the Democrats right. will pick up a number of seats in the House. The Senate is looking harder and harder and harder. There are a number of governorships that the Democrats should pick up. But I don't think we're looking at this massive tidal wave, at least not as we sit here today. Things will change. But as we sit here today, I am much, much more temperate on what I see as a Democratic outcome. So to me, Paul Ryan leaving now, yeah, maybe he was thinking I could lose the speakership, but I think much more than I think this is going to be odd. I think it was a politician who made an honest comment. I think he wants to spend time with his kids.
I agree. Last question, briefly.
Yes.
If the president works to fire Rod Rosenstein or figures out how to get rid of Mueller, all this other kind of stuff, my guess is Republicans don't put country over party. They just, even though a few of them are sort of saying it'll be the end of his presidency, I think most of them will shut up. Lindsey Graham may not, but a few of them, they'll fade away. They're all worried about November. In the end, does it cost the Republicans if that kind of firing goes on and Republicans don't stand up to the president?
Look, I'm deeply saddened to hear what you just said because I happen to agree with you. You know, you look back on 1974, and you look back on Nixon and the impeachment, and you look at, you know, some of the Republican heroes who had the courage to step up and just say, this is wrong. I mean, you know, the rule of law is the most important thing in this country. It is what makes us different. It's what makes us a great democracy. And if we start losing that, then we have lost everything. And I think there will be some backlash against Republicans in states, let's say, like New York and whatnot, where that you have Republican congressmen upstate or possibly some places in Illinois. But overarching, I think most Republicans are going to hold the line because that's what they've been doing. They do not have the courage to stand up against him. And I think you will see that most of them will fall in line. I think John McCain, Lindsey Graham, some people like that will speak out, Senator Flake. But I think by and large, they'll be wringing their hands and saying things like Senator Grassley did. Will they actually move to do something? Sadly, no.
And it's just, you know, I try and make this not as a partisan comment, but we all know that if this was President Hillary Clinton and any of these things were going on, they'd be calling for just, you know, the electric chair here. And it's just amazing that if indeed the things that are alleged to have happened under this presidency or, you know, tied to the administration, if they happened, if they did, I don't know if they did, Trump supporters listening in, the fact that anybody just turns away, ignores it and says move on, it's just stunning to me. I would feel the same way if it was President Hillary Clinton or President Barack Obama or whoever it is.
Right.
And you're in that office. You just can't do the stuff that's alleged to have gone on here.
I couldn't agree with you more. I was going to say something similar. There are things that are bigger than party. There are things that are bigger than individuals. And the American democracy, the rule of law, the thing that makes us great in the world, the thing that, you know, separates us from the other countries of the world and the reason we are, you know, this beacon for everyone else, you need to stand up for it. It doesn't matter who's the president. It doesn't matter what party they are. You need the courage to stand up and defend the country that you have sworn to protect. And it is stunning to me how many people are unwilling to do that. And let's just hope we're wrong, Paul. Let's just hope that there are people of goodwill who, if we go down that road, will put party aside, will put career aside, and do what's right for the country, because that is ultimately why they're there.
It's hard to argue that country before party should not be the mantra for everybody. Richard Gordon, attorney, political strategist, who knows some people who apparently will be nominated for governor. I didn't ask you the name. Didn't ask you the name. But thank you for your time and insight. I appreciate it, my friend, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you so much. Pleasure being on.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's P-A-U-L-L-I-S-N-E-K. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.